burial ground too. Well, a lot of parishes had that connected with their, because there were not the provisions elsewhere. They did it themselves. My congregation out there too had its own little, you'll come to some too, I'm sure, where there is the cemetery. And all of this, Walter is concerned to be done decently and in order. The requisites for the public service, that includes everything that has to do with the running of the service, time of opening. You ought to give them enough time to discuss things. Don't ram things through. How cautious they were already there. And how much of this is still current, for that matter. Good advice. Persuade them. If it's a matter of an adiaphoron, why persuade them by the goodness of the thing? But let it be discussed for a bit. As a rule, all matters not determined by the word of God should be decided by this majority vote. But if it should become apparent that forcing the decision of the majority might, because of the infirmity of many, cause a breach or some other harm, the majority should, for the sake of love and peace, yield to the minority. Now, you want to probably bring this one up once more in conjunction with contemporary problems. Number 45. We'll come back to that. Does he mean what some people are meaning today or not? You'll have to read this one in the light of others that have preceded, I'm sure. One speaker at a time. Apparently they had their problems in that day when Schmidt and Meyer both wanted to speak at the same time. I was first, and or I sat first, you know, and so on. Somebody can skip there. Everyone knowing precisely the extent of his duties. If the congregation adopts a written a constitution, why if? Well, frankly, a congregation has a constitution, I suppose he's implying, in what? In the scriptures and in the confession. It really doesn't need it all that bad, I suppose. But if it does adopt one, it should contain only what is most necessary. That partly accounts for the fact that back in 1917, when our third constitution was adopted, in 47, 54, and then 1917, that one is even shorter than the one that we had in 54. Our forefathers have always been very conscious of this, that there is no need for great length, but for brevity. Not only is the soul of wit, but also of precision. You can clutter a constitution with too many articles and bylaws. It may be even our synodical constitution is getting a little bit that way. Our bylaws. I don't mean the constitution is still short. Notice the emphasis in 51. Every man ought to be willing to bring his proportionate share. Then he comes to the close here, the performance to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of love and peace, starting out by the prayer for all saints. And number 53, the local congregation should also give all diligence to be one with it in point of life, it ought to be one with it, in point of life, and speak the same thing, same mind, same judgment, therefore also in point of doctrine. And there I quoted the reference from Book of Concord of not departing even a finger's breadth from the subjects which the confessions themselves have covered. 54 has regard, you know, to each congregation respecting the boundaries of the other. Number 55, the transfer of members from one congregation to the other, not receiving an excommunicated member from another congregation unless he has been invalidly excommunicated, and that can be determined. That's number 57. It could happen. Number 58, the arrangement that ought to apply as far as the release of a pastor who has received a call from another congregation, be given a peaceful release by his congregation if he feels called to go. The readiness to listen to other congregations in number 59, 60, recognizing distress of these neighboring congregations and the readiness of the congregation to share its pastor with other parishes yet not, filled with a resident pastor or have lost their pastor, that he might serve in an affiliated sort of charge for the time. Then number G closes it off, the performance and building up, fostering the church at large. It's significant, I think, that he ends that way. And look how he starts. I've always contended myself that our philosophy in this church of ours has been, you don't need a recruitment officer. Now, you don't spread this word too far. You don't need a fancy dandy sort of recruitment agency as long as you've got the parishes themselves minded to send their boys into the ministry. Now, this has got to be at the home base, it seems to me. Most of you, when you answer this, how you've been influenced to come, it's either been by parents or by parents. By pastors or by, I meant to say, or parents. Parents or pastors or both. And this is still, I think, the real foundation for the future of the church, that the gifted young men are turned in that direction. We've pretty well undercut our synodical preparatory school system by this point. I don't know just what lies in the future. You're going to be having to deal with it. But I think that last point would still obtain as far as the future recruiting of pastors for the church. Where will they come from if they don't come from the parishes themselves, motivated to put their full-time service into the work of the Lord? Number 63, taking care that the word is preached in that midst, the bread of life. Notice the emphasis of Bible distribution that early. They were not by any means participants yet with the American Bible Society, but it had been founded, I think, 1816, if I remember right. They want to distribute the Bible. The publishing house gets into the picture very soon. So that, and then the 65-year mission outreach, they were concerned for that, evangelism into the wide world. And then 66, the readiness to unite with Lutheran congregations, wherever they might be, when there is opportunity for such union, and it serves to promote the glory of God and the upbuilding of his kingdom, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. Walter was never for separatism or the breaking up of a synod. At the same time, he was never for any kind of compromise of the articles of faith of the Lutheran Church as we've got them in our confession. So the very first thing he always mentioned in every reference to a synod and its formation or to the writing of the Constitution was always in conjunction with the purity, the orthodoxy of its teaching. He never relinquishes this. The synod has not, this is not its history. Now, in summary there, I suppose I would just add a few thoughts that we've then stressed the fact that the in the polity which the church has conceived, you've got this distinct stress which is made as far as the autonomy of the local congregation goes. We've seen that. In the larger sense, the church body is not autonomous in that same way. There's something of a very democratic nature of the congregation formed around this priesthood of believers. And then the urgency, what you'd have to call, if that's called a kind of a brotherhood of believers, a true brotherhood of believers at a local level, around the Word of God, around the marks, then a sisterhood of congregations. So both these things become very very prominent to them, that the integrity, the autonomy, the sovereignty of a local parish be regarded, and at the same time that the fellowship of those congregations united with us in the faith, that be fostered and furthered as well. But in all of this, the authority of the local congregation does remain supreme. And they have repudiated, our forefathers, all forms of church government which in any way would establish an episcopal sort of control or domination by a consistory, or even by a synod, for that matter. They do not envision a synod as a ruling, legislating sort of body, actually. Not the synod. As though it were to rule the church. The congregations remain autonomous according to the formation of our synod. So neither is there such a ecclesiastical controlling body, nor is there to be a secular ruling control in the church. The Caesaro papism. There's no pope, there is no Caesar, as far as the local congregation is concerned. It is under God, its own sovereign, autonomous entity, gathered around the authority of the word. And really, no other constitution is really therefore necessary other than this basic platform on which a Christian congregation ought to stand. And now, since Luther's time, also the confessions have been mentioned as an additional norm by which we norm our faith or our stance. We've seen how certain things may be delegated, how certain things are adiaphora and are adjustable, and we've seen especially how the layman become a very integral part of the representative body, which in a local congregation, and then in the synod for that matter, is to be heard. Its voice is surely to be understood there or felt there. And that all goes back, as we see, to the priesthood of believers, all believers' doctrine in the church. Now, we got about a half an hour. The other thing I would like to do, yet, in conjunction with these, and if you want to get back to these, you may, or, as I say, copy them for yourself, and we can always discuss them, or you can pick up certain, I think several topics are evident in some of these things, too, that you might explore if you're interested in writing a little study paper. The other thing I would like to do yet, two things. One is rather short. I think I should go right to it. What did Walther once say as far as synod being advisory? I think you're interested in this whole matter, as I was too.